Welcome, this is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show tonight dealing with a subject we have dealt with before. Hopefully, this will be of interest to you because I'm going to tell a few things that I think I haven't been able to cover in the past. And tonight's show is going to be about understanding evil. Now, how does evil fit in with metaphysics and spirituality? Well, one way to understand that is that we are really here because the creator of our universe wants us to have free will, free choice. The purpose of that is so that this is not some kind of puppet show that is being lived out by the thoughts of a greater being, and we are just actors, so to speak. In order for there to be free will, there also needs to be, obviously, the ability for some of us, particularly humans, to choose, to be able to choose, to not function in a way which is in the best interests of the Creator, and even the purpose of the Creator, and seeks in a strange way to contradict and even paradoxically try to destroy the very thing the Creator wishes to create, which is more of life. So the odd thing about this is that if we assume that one of the purposes of life itself is to create more of our Creator, then we have a very interesting paradox. Because if some of us, hopefully only a few, want to destroy the growth of life so that we destroy the growth of our own Creator, or to deny the existence of the Creator in that process as well, we have that ability to do so because we're free to choose that as our means of expression, our means of creation of ourselves and of other things that we may so deem as important. Very interesting. Many people get confused by that and say, well, if God is all good and God is all powerful, then how can there be evil? A philosopher named Hegel and some other people came up with, and there's all kinds of paradoxes in that. But the interesting thing is that if you come to the conclusion that God, or the creator of our universe, seeks in its expression for us to be free in our choices, then obviously evil has to be open to its expression rather than closed. Of course, I haven't defined what evil is right now, but I've done so in prior shows, so I'm saying this for those of you who have heard that, and also I'm going to define evil next, so don't worry about that. But nonetheless, this is a very interesting process because the thing that kind of thrills me about it, I'm not thrilled about evil, but the thing that thrills me about this openness is the very conviction being carried through of seeking that all of life be capable of both challenging its own creator and in creating more of its creator to eventually be part of its creator and maybe even in some respects to exceed elements of its creator at some point in its distant future. So the interesting thing about this is that there's this amazing humility that's an expression of God. Now, I'm using that as a springboard because from that point of looking at it from a humble position, in other words, God is humble. God is humble in its expression of itself and its expression of what it chooses to grow from itself, which is the creation of life. Then we have another interesting point. If evil is really the more or less curtailment of the expression of God, then evil is lacks humility to the umpteenth level in expression and has absolutely no signs in reality of what we would consider to be humility. Now you say, okay, but you haven't defined that for tonight at least. Of course, if you've listened to any of my earlier shows, of course I have. But nonetheless, and I will define that too, but nonetheless, it really gives me some thought, it gives me some pause to think that here is a being that is so humble That means that it has laid itself aside and said, you know, even me and my absolute greatness of being all that can be at the moment, anyway, can be open to the expression of part of what I am, to seek to not be me, and to seek to destroy even that which would grow more of me. That is an amazing position, and it shows this great great humility. Now, let's define evil. Evil is the following. It is the absurd position that there is either no God, and that the destruction of the growth of life is without any recourse. It doesn't matter whether one were to destroy the life in any respects, and particularly the overall growth of life, because there is no recourse. It doesn't change one's reality, doesn't change one's existence at any particular level, and it may even enhance one's position to be able to do this, if one could conclude that it's capable of doing so. And therefore, either God doesn't exist, or God is of no consequence in its existence, should it exist. Very interesting, because that, to me, defines the position of what I call evil. And not all things that people claim are evil are really evil. By the way, I really jumped into the subject, and I forgot to mention, if you would like to call in, you can, because this is a live call-in talk show. You can do that. And if you're in the U.S., you can call 877-876-5227. If you're in Canada, try 888-815-9756. We took care of that now. Good, okay. In case you didn't know that either, that means you haven't been listening probably in the past and you didn't know it. Okay. So here is a most fascinating way to understand this, is that what a lot of people think of as evil, like, oh, that was an evil thing someone did, or that was, that it may not really rise to the level of what evil can and should be defined as, because evil is a conscious element in it. In itself, even though it loses consciousness by its position and it's continually seeking to become more powerful, if not more conscious, usually it doesn't care too much about its consciousness, although it doesn't seek to lose it, but it is losing it, even though it isn't aware of that necessarily. It is in a circumstance almost always somewhat aware that what it is doing is destructive in some way to some form of the growth of other life. It's aware of that. Now, you would say, well, where is its awareness of that? Where is its consciousness of that? Well, the interesting thing is that its consciousness of that usually can be derived by the following kind of thought process, which is that it is more important in virtually every respect than the parts of life that it seeks to destroy the growth of. And it does so with, we'll call it arrogance, being the almost extreme opposite of humility. So in other words, in an arrogant fashion, in a fashion in which it is so sure of itself, that it has no doubts that it can use whatever means open to itself to be destructive to the growth of some parts of life, and oftentimes without regard any part of life. So an interesting point here is to consider that a lot of people who we may think may be evil only rise to the level of being dark. Now, what does dark mean? Meaning that they are against the spirit, the spiritual thinking of others, which is God's thought in others. They're against the goodness that may be developed in some others. But they are not necessarily arrogant. Now, therefore they have some level of humility at some times. It's very, very interesting. It's hard to deal with from our perspective, from humans, most of humanity, that is not evil, because arrogance is oftentimes something that we don't see. We don't completely grasp what's going on in others, and we don't necessarily see evil, because evil seeks to hide itself. It knows its arrogance is ugly. It knows that its position is abominable to and terrible to others, and that it would be quickly shunned and put aside if discovered. So it pretends to not be arrogant. It pretends to not be destructive to the growth of life. And it pretends to oftentimes be for, in some limited way, God by going to a church or professing a certain type of religious stance. But even within its religious stance, that is oftentimes, if you really push on it, highly arrogant, and oftentimes a type of religious stance that is intolerant to almost any other religious position. If it uses religion at all, some types of evil are obviously not religious at all, but others who employ evil are. So it's important to understand that because a person says, oh, I believe in God, or I follow my religion to the umpteenth level, religion doesn't mean anything other than, okay, that's a specific way of how you choose to worship God. But if you worship God by saying that all other religions are bad, or a certain religion is bad, or a certain way of believing in God is bad, or we should go kill people who are not following the kind of religion we are in, then obviously those people are suspiciously on the side of evil, or at least are very close to that side, if not in it, because there are other indicators. Again, you have to look at this overall life, you being one of this arrogance, the disrespect for the growth of life. You have to be disrespectful to do that. You have to have there has to be some level of conscious element here, too. People that are blindly following certain things may not be evil, weird as it sounds, because there's no conscious element. They aren't aware enough. And you say, who are those people? Why would they fall into that category? Well, maybe they have been literally drugged. Maybe they have been tortured. Maybe they've had certain kinds of conditioning that has produced this effect. But given opportunities to change, they might easily do so. Whereas people who are truly evil, there's nothing you can do to change them. No matter how much you face them with realities that are different, they are intractable. Trust me on this one. Well, okay, you might say, all right, maybe I will trust John, but let's see, what about humility? Can you define humility? Humility is the ability to admit to being potentially wrong in anyone's thought, feelings, or action. And it needs to carry through. If you carry something to an action level, to be humble, you have to be willing to change your actions as well, based upon the willingness to see your own mistakes, admit to the validity of other people's actions, the other people's feelings and other people's thoughts. That's humility. And if someone is humble, they are functioning as God and their creator. If they are arrogant and not humble, they're functioning against that. And they oftentimes are doing a lot of other things which we're going to cover in tonight's show. Well, this is very interesting. I'm finding it fascinating even as I explain it. Now, we get into another interesting possibility, interesting area, that comes into mind here. Okay, how many people are really then evil in this world? I mean, is it like everybody you meet? Are more people becoming evil as time goes by? Is this a problem we really have to worry about? And that sort of thing. And the answers are pretty interesting from this standpoint. At the present time, evil is growing at a fairly rapid rate. It's due to a number of conditions, some of them you may have heard me talk about before. There's a change in the focus of ray energy on our planet, which is allowing some people who are pretty dark to become more likely to become evil. We also have problems with things that encourage evil, such as drug possessions, people using drugs and getting possessed by those who are very evil in the astral world, and using people who are only somewhat evil and easily possessed in this world. And so that's a difficult point right there. That's going on. And what else is happening that is leading to this? We have more organized groups of people who I would call evil, because they are seeking to destroy the growth of life, and both human life and, in some cases, wantonly, it will affect the life of the whole planet in some respects. Now, does this mean that everybody who has some radical idea that might be destructive to life in some way is evil? Well, actually, probably not. It has to reach this level. It has to reach a level where it is predominantly focused on the human kingdom, and its purpose is to force or try to get those that aren't destroyed in their growth towards God to become imprisoned, and to prevent the ability to grow more in some virtuous and spiritual way. It interferes with God's first tenet of freedom. And so that's a very important issue. And if it is happening, then you could say, ah, there's a sign. So let me give you some examples of this, because I always think that this is helpful. Let's say you got a group of people who say that they want to burn an awful lot of fossil fuels because they're interested in saving money and it's easy to do. And they, in so doing, might kill some people, certainly going to kill a lot of other lower life on our planet, and over time, maybe it might wipe out the whole world. Doesn't that sound evil in some respects? Well, not exactly, because here's what's missing. While they are doing these things, they are not directly trying to interfere with others who basically may be doing something different. They aren't trying to destroy the choices that others have. They're just trying to promote their own ideas and choices, which may be kind of dark and sinister and very selfish. But nonetheless, if you look at it, it's not a state of evil. Now, I know that some people think that, and I've heard it stated that way. But we have to be objective here if we're using these definitions, and it doesn't rise to that level. Now, let's take another group. Another group says, hey, we don't really care about whether or not some people are putting out a lot of carbon emissions, heating up the world, or maybe putting up certain pollutants. It doesn't matter to us. We're going to make sure that you do what we say. You're going to cover your head if you're a woman, and you're going to not go to school, and you're not going to be able to do this, and you're going to do exactly what we think and feel, whatever is necessary. And all of these things are going to eliminate your choices in life, and you cannot create any more of your creator except the way we say, supposedly, is our way of creating the creator, which really is to destroy the creator by destroying freedom. We are going to imprison you. We are going to prevent you from being anything that you may choose to be if it isn't exactly what we are. And if you don't do what we say, we will imprison you, torture you, kill you, and maybe other life as well. Bingo. Evil. Got it? That's evil. All right. So, I hope I'm not confusing anybody about this, because I'm trying to be as succinct as possible. Of course, you can think of some exceptions to what I'm saying. Because in anything that you state that is evil, there are nuances. You have to look at the broader portions of what is being painted in some circumstances. And there could be a rare situation where even everything I defined may not exactly fit what is happening. But overall, evil falls in a broad way into these things, and it really is, it's right there in your face. If you are the victim of evil, you will never doubt it. It's those people who are not directly the victims that go around saying, well, evil doesn't exist. It's really not a big problem, because it's just a bunch of people who didn't have an opportunity to be loved when they were little, and given the right opportunities to be given this or that, and then they would be fine. Well, remember, evil is a missing element. It isn't really about being educated. It isn't about being loved. It's about what's going on inside a person in choosing to reject their own creator and to put themselves before all else. The worst kinds of circumstances can produce very good people. Yet, sometimes only moderate or not even bad circumstances can produce very evil people. Because the circumstances are not exterior. They are interior in the cases that we're dealing with. It's what's going on inside that is so critical. And that's why it's so hard to find all the exterior reasons. Because they really aren't there. It's evil is a choice. And we have the freedom to make that choice. People usually make it because they seek in themselves to be the most important thing in their existence. That's the bottom line. People who don't believe that they are so very important, no matter how dark they get it, no matter how selfish they may manifest, are not likely to become evil. And that's something that's hard for some of us to adjust to. Okay. Then, hopefully we've gotten to the point where we've gone a little deeper in this than I have in some other shows on this subject, and it's becoming a little more apparent what I mean by this. Now, you can disagree, and if you do, you can call in. You know, I don't mind someone calling up and say, ah, there's no such thing as evil, you're just crazy or something. That's all right, I don't mind, really. And I want to also go a bit further in defining some of the ways that evil functions now. A part of its functioning is it tends to be controlled by thought that is common. And you can say, well, how can that be? I mean, aren't these people individuals if they're seeking to really be more important, etc.? Well, that's part of their thought, yes, and they have that in common, actually. But when people become evil, they have either ignored or given up, one or the other, their own soul. And some of the people who are evil are just ignoring their soul, and they still have one, but it's very remote to their self-structure. And for a lot of people who are evil, they have actually just said, I don't want anything to do with my soul. In either case, it could be either way, there is a thing called the group soul of evil. And you say, well, wait a second, human beings are supposed to have an individual soul. I've heard you say that many times. Yeah, that's exactly right. Human beings have an individual soul, and this is gonna maybe shock you, but human beings and those who have elected as human beings to become evil and have demonstrated this as part of their life, that they defined it, to show all the signs that I have so far defined, those people actually have removed themselves from being human, at least for the time that they choose to think that way and to function that way. They are not functioning within the human kingdom. Instead, they are in another kingdom, so to speak, called a sub-kingdom, that is controlled by the group soul of evil. And they are much closer to being animals, in some respects, than they are of being human. It's sort of like a cross between a weird kind of an animal and a weird kind of a human, and not exactly either. These people, if we can call them that, have reached the level of substituting for the growth of consciousness and awareness and understanding of their own creator, power, control, and we'll call it the practicing of belief that they are the most important thing in the universe. They are the most important thing in the universe. Even if they claim they believe in quote-unquote God, and God is everything. God is everything. But God is everything provided God and themselves are in agreement with everything that they do. Then God is everything. Well, you could see that now they have really substituted themselves for God, but they don't admit to that, and it doesn't become clear until you challenge them about anything, and then it will be. It's a fascinating idea. And that's for the few people who do that. Not everybody who's evil even says God exists, but it doesn't really matter. And it doesn't mean, by the way, I want to correct any misunderstanding in people's minds about this. It doesn't mean that someone doesn't believe in God, who is a complete atheist, is evil. They have to have all the other qualities I mentioned. Some people are far from evil, but they don't necessarily believe in God. So there's a thing called converse logic. It doesn't mean that just because you don't believe in God, you don't, you know, that you're evil. That's only one condition that may be part of being evil, but it isn't certainly, doesn't make anyone evil by having that as a condition. All right. What are the other elements in a functional sense that we can say about evil? Evil tends to reverse thought rather than to create thought. And why is that? Well, thought contains the element, when it is virtuous, of truth. And to reverse thought against truth takes a lot of effort and over time has many contradictions in it. So evil people trying to create new thought find themselves in a quagmire because they're constantly fighting their own thoughts against the thoughts of others. And this produces a lot of problems for them. So most of the time they just reverse the existing thought. They do the opposite in their thinking, which is quite easy to do in a relatively non-creative way. And so this is the more common way for evil to think. When evil wants to be creative in its thought, come up with new ways of destroying our creator, then at that point it's challenging a number of issues in the question of how mental thought works, and the process can be very difficult for it to come up with new thoughts, new ideas of things. And so its tendency is to just do this reversal. Like when we say one thing is one way, evil will say it's the opposite. That's the easiest thing for it to do. And so we find that that's a way of finding evil, is to see how much a particular person, as an example, is continually reversing the thought of those around him or her. Well, it's something to consider, and we're going to be back in all about 2.5 minutes or so, and we will go into this subject some more.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yes, and we're talking tonight about understanding evil. So, and this is a show that I'm going a little deeper in tonight than I have on prior shows where we've talked about evil. I'm doing this because I expect that some of those of you who are listening tonight have heard some of those earlier shows and might have these deeper concerns and questions, and I thought it would be good to go deeper. And for those of you who have not heard this before, well, you can still probably stay up with us. I'll try to make sure I cover enough of the basics so we can do that. So we were talking about the group soul of evil. And what is this characteristic of this group soul? Where does it exist anyway? Well, this is going to surprise some people. The group soul of evil is in a galaxy far, far away. You know, I'm not into that business, the Star Wars, but it is true. It is one of the most distant galaxies in our universe, because it was an earlier galaxy in its development than ours. And this particular galaxy went pretty dark. And because of that, it was able to create such a strong amount of evil within itself. A whole galaxy, not like our galaxy. Our galaxy is not anywhere near that level. But that it developed a group soul that can contact anyone who wants to think, chooses to think, with the arrogance and all the other things I said, anywhere in the universe. And you can say, well, how does it contact? I mean, you know, isn't light the only thing, the fastest thing it can move? And it takes billions of years for light to move. And then how could someone cross the galaxy and thought, well, yeah, that's what physics says today, but that isn't the way it really works. Evil can contact someone within a fraction of a second, and so the communication can be just like they're right next to you. And it can do this anytime someone is thinking in a similar fashion. Not just acting, but even just thinking can connect someone to evil. And worse than that, if they do take actions, it's really bad. And it has to be at the levels that I suggested. It can't be just because someone once in a while takes some negative thought or something. No, that's not going to get you connected with a group soul of evil. You need to really be really focused in that, and you have to be consistent, and it has to be something that usually is carried out in behavior, but not always. Okay, so that's very, very important to realize that connection. Now, the group soul, once it starts to take over, even if a person hasn't given up by their own choice having an individual soul, the group soul then becomes the focus of what the person is doing, and it makes many suggestions to the person subconsciously that oftentimes will be in coincident action with those around that person who are also evil. And especially on a single planet like Earth, what you see happening is that evil works in concert, even when it's unaware of this concert, with others who are functioning in evil. So it's like, here's these people who want to be the most important thing in the world and think they are the most significant individual, and yet they are lacking almost all the elements of individuality because they are being mostly controlled by a singular entity of thought, a group soul, that is feeding them a bunch of what they're thinking and what actions they're taking. And is basically a puppet master that is controlling, you know, on our planet, millions of people who are working somewhat in concert towards a plan of destroying the growth of life in our world. Eva works usually within what's called a ring past nine, which is usually by planets. So Eva tends to work on one planet at a time, but as I said earlier, it can overcome planets and get through whole solar systems and eventually even parts or majority of a galaxy. That would be a terrible, terrible thing to have happen here in our part of the universe or part of the physical part of the universe. Eva has not gotten beyond the astral level in taking over a galaxy. So there's a lot of dimensionality, even in the galaxy that became mostly evil, that is not evil, that is beyond evil, and evil is not effectively taken over. But if a galaxy were to become physically and astrally evil, it's a very, very terrible thing to consider. And even if a planet gets to that level, that is a horrendously bad set of circumstances. Most planets that even come close to that are allowed to self-destruct, because that's usually what happens. Evil left on its own will destroy itself. That's a bizarre thing. Evil does not have to be fought against to be self-destructive, because it's trying to destroy the growth of life, and guess what? It's alive. So if it destroys the growth of life, eventually it will destroy itself, but it could take a lot of time to do that, because it lives by sucking life from other parts of life that isn't yet evil. And evil even has a hierarchy to itself, so that the lower parts of evil are sucked from by the higher parts. Ooh, that sounds pretty bad, right? And so it is ultimately self-destructive. It's kind of like thinking about this as a pyramid system, if you're familiar with some of the pyramid systems of selling things, etc. That's really how evil functions. So you can imagine what I think about those kinds of systems of sales. At any rate, it eventually destroys itself because the bottom cannot support the top over time. And the reason for that is, although there's plenty of life to feed upon through power and control that lies outside of evil, the efficiency model gets into a problem. There's only so much that you can get so fast. And if the top keeps growing, the bottom begins to become anemic and eventually unable to supply the necessary power to do what is necessary to be done. And it causes a disruption and eventually destruction in the system. Evil can be destroyed by goodness deciding to prevent its further involvement in processing and being able to force those who are not evil through fear into doing what it seeks to do, whatever that is. So when stood up to, evil shrinks, because it only functions as long as there is sufficient fear on the part of those who are not evil, or who are evil but who are still functioning afraid to those who are greater in evil, more powerful, into causing some type of destruction or some type of suffering, some type of pain. So as long as we, the rest of us, do not shirk away from and are not responding with fear to evil, the results are that evil cannot survive. It will not be victorious. But when we do respond in that way, evil grows and can actually overpower those who are not evil. There are some places on Earth right now that are in the dilemma of this issue. God allows this to happen because it is free will of humans, and it also leads sometimes to the growth of spiritual development, because one of the concerns is always that we be challenged to some extent in being a creator. A creator is not a position of comfort and ease. The creator has to make choices that involve sacrifice. And the creator has to choose to give freedom to others, not just seek to have freedom for itself and allow others to be free. It has to give freedom, sometimes through great sacrifice. And that means overcoming the fear of having others trying to take it away. So we are challenged in this world. We're challenged in many worlds, but this world particularly. Here, evil is attempting to gain its superiority in the mental world by overcoming truth at this particular time in our history. We go back thousands of years ago, this is not so much true. But it is today. And today, because of the development of our monastic body, our mental body, evil is seeking to do this, but it has yet been able to. If it were to overcome that and to create the opposite of truth, you might think of the Nazis if you think about this, then it would live through a complete turnaround of all the concepts and thoughts that people today think are good and create God, and come up with opposing concepts that most people would buy into. And our planet would then be open to being literally wiped out by our own selves, but also possibly by some extra, things outside of human control, because it wastes a lot of resources to allow things to go so far that you just allow a planet to become completely dark. You might say, well, isn't that contradictory to what you just said, that we're free to continue to go on? Well, yeah, we're free to continue to go on, but there are points where the obvious is going to take place, and there is an issue about time. Do you want to allow all of this to take place with the resignation of those who are alive to continuing to become worse and worse instead of improving in the development of a creator? And the basis of the final act of this has to do with the souls behind the life that's created. What happens is, on a planet such as Earth, if Earth really starts going very dark, most of the good souls will just say, time to leave. And that leaves the planet in a state of such negativity, because there's virtually only evil that's here. It invites negative energies coming from all kinds of sources that leads to natural crises, as well as to the evil people themselves destroying each other. It isn't that God says, okay, I'm going to smite thee with my great hand and wipe you out. Rather, the darkness of those that are here, that are left, brings it about. It's this energy-following thought business that produces it when it's on such a wide scale. So the planet reacts, we'll say, by producing volcanic reactions, earthquakes, maybe asteroids come and hit us, maybe the sun starts putting out too much energy and other things. Terrible things start happening, but as a result of those that are here creating it, and remember, there's very few good souls left around, because the souls literally that are left, that are good, they won't necessarily stay. Every soul is here by choice, and when it looks like that choice is no longer going to benefit those that remain, then souls are wise, and they say, oh, there's no sense in putting the effort in here because this planet's gone bad. Why is Earth in such turmoil at the present time? And it is, by the way. Because we are an experiment. This is going to sound crazy, but I've mentioned it before in other shows, and some people think it's not so crazy. And that is that my understanding is that Earth is, at the present time, and has been since humans really came to exist on it, in a state in which we are trying to challenge the development of evil mentally. And you can say, what do you mean we're trying to challenge it? Does that mean we want to create evil? No. It was put in a position where evil could be created, and created quickly and in a mental way over time, so that we, earthlings, as souls, but as the incarnates as souls as well, us who are living here today in the physical world, can find ways to grow ourselves and to defeat the growth of evil mentally, because there has been not enough experimentation in finding ways to prevent evil from becoming a mental force. Most of the time, it doesn't even get past the astral level of development, and Earth is a place now where it is already into the mental development, and we are here to stop it. Our souls chose to be here. I know it sounds crazy. Most of you are saying, well, hey, I didn't choose to be here. What do you mean my soul chose? Well, you're not enough connected to your soul to know that, but that's what I'm telling you. When you get back to being your soul, you're going to say, you know what? I'm ready for another round. Let's go do it again. And that's the point. We choose to do this even though it doesn't make much sense to us while we're incarnate in physical existence. It may make a little more sense while we're astrally alive, and certainly more sense when we're mentally alive. I mean, focused in our consciousness in those realms. We're technically alive in all those realms to some extent, but not fully conscious. Okay, so this is what's happening. We have chosen to be here so that we can find new creative ways of defeating evil to prevent it from becoming widespread in a mental sense, but as well physically and astrally too. But what I'm saying, this mental thing is a big deal because there's very few worlds where this has taken place, and it needs to be experimented with now so that millions of years in the future, there will be, we'll say, a whole arsenal of things that can be used on other planets and other worlds that have been tried and true right here on Earth and in some other few worlds like us. And the souls that came here are tenacious ones who seek to really fight against this problem. Some of them have, unfortunately, created incarnates who have also become victimized by it and have become evil themselves. Because when you go to a place that is tough as Earth, some of the incarnates, the souls, not the souls themselves, become the victims of the process rather than the succeeders. And the results are terrible because they actually enter in and become the evil that they came to fight. And that's how evil grows. It sucks these people in, and they become what they came to fight against. Does that mean we should have great compassion and love for all those who have become evil? No. Our love is for their souls. The incarnates have lowered themselves to the lowly human level, and we have to seek to stop them. Reminds me of Star Trek, and for those of you who have watched that particular show, you may know something about this. Yeah, they have these creatures that one could say certainly represent some concept of evil. And they go out and they literally bring in others, absorb others into their culture, sort of like a bees do. They work function to like bees might, and they all work together as a collective, but they, unlike bees, they actually make everything else around them a part of themselves. Yeah, honestly, they do that. If you haven't watched that show, those of you who have know what I'm talking about. This is in the newer versions of Star Trek. And I think it's a very good example of how evil does work. So it's actually an interesting point that it is a very dark and evil means of expression. That's one of the things I like about science fiction. Sometimes it could be closer to real than many other elements of, we'll say, fiction. Okay, so that's how our Earth is presently functioning. It is in a challenging position. We are here to challenge evil. That's why things are not so sedate. That's why things are not so copacetic. We are in a position now of great struggle. How do we end up winning the struggle in the physical world? In the physical world, evil can be directly confronted, and physical force needs to be used at times to both prevent its further destruction of life and to get others that are not evil to become active in the fight. So action is part of it, and particularly in the physical world, force sometimes needs to be employed. The weird thing about this is when you get to the astral and mental worlds, you can't use force. Because there, you can only isolate. In the physical world, if you try to isolate evil and not use force or avoid using force, the result is the evil eventually grows and will overpower good. Every time good tries to ignore evil, it tries to isolate it, we'll just make a nice little, embargo against evil. That doesn't work, because in the physical world, evil uses power in the physical way and will overpower goodness if goodness tries to do that. In the astral world, that isn't true. The astral world, you can isolate evil, and when it's isolated, it actually destroys itself because it has to find new sources for it to suck on, you see. And so it actually works in the astral world. It won't work in the physical, because you can't force evil to feel something or to think something that it chooses not to. Whereas in the physical world, you can choose to prevent evil from acting without trying to force it to think or feel a certain way. So in other words, we can choose to do, even kill, I know it sounds terrible, kill a certain evil if it's challenging us in that way. But we can't force it to feel or think something, because that would be evil, and then we would be functioning with an evil in the physical world. Isn't that strange? I know it sounds very weird, but that's the way it is. And we can isolate evil in the astral world, in the mental world, if it gets to the point where we would have to isolate in the mental world. That's not necessary right now. But we cannot forcibly try to do anything to it in terms of its actions. We can just isolate it, prevent it from functioning in realms where goodness is doing well. The way it's isolated is through love and truth. Love and truth in the astral and mental worlds isolates evil. It does not work that way in the physical world. You can love in the most profound ways the most hideous of people in the physical world, and they will come and chop your head off. So don't try to do that, because it won't work. Okay, now, what do I mean by force? If we have to use force against others, does force always mean some kind of physical violence or something like that? No. Sometimes force is the rule of law. Sometimes force is elements that incorporate the prevention of someone from taking actions that is open to us in so doing. But remember, underneath even the rule of law, there is what? Force. I mean, what if someone breaks the law and just keeps breaking the law? Well, eventually someone comes and grabs them, forcibly puts them in handcuffs, throws them in jail. And what if someone is shooting at you or something like that? If you have the right to defend yourself, you will shoot back. And if you have further law involved in the situation, they will take even more proactive types of forceful measures against those that are challenging them in those ways. Very important, because remember, these are the elements in which we use criteria to understand evil. You know what? I'm running out of time. I could talk for another hour about this subject easily. Hopefully this has made some sense tonight. I hope that we'll have another opportunity to maybe go into this deeper at another occasion, because there's a lot more to explain about this. If you have an opportunity, this coming Sunday, I'm going to be talking again on the radio. If you're in the Boston, Norfolk, or Providence, Rhode Island area, listen in on 1170 AM. If you're not there, but you still would like to hear me, go to WDISAM.com. Just as you are listening on the internet right now, and listen to me live. And it's from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you're in a different time zone from that, figure it out and listen in. I would love to have you participate and listen in to what's going on with that. Also, if you happen to be in the Phoenix metropolitan area, and you can get here, say, on Monday, January 19th, that's this coming Monday, come in and participate and listen to Mimi, a member of the spiritual group I'm a member of, talk about the science of relationships at Borders Books and Music at Mesa Fiesta. It's the Mesa store across from Fiesta Mall, and that's from 7 to 8:15 p.m. So please come and join us on that occasion. Love to have you. Hopefully this has made some sense to you all. And we are out of time for right now. So until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.